Dogs, a review podcast from the team here at Mad Artists. Every so often, we'll be breaking down a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, whatever we're feeling like. And this week, to continue our Lord of the Rings series, we watched The Two Towers. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists and friends that I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey everyone, it's Samuel, your resident Tolkien nerd.
Hey everybody, it's Rick.
Your other resident Tolkien nerd.
Hey everybody, it's Tyler, your casual Tolkien observer.
Stay with
there
it.
We go. Help.
He is just a Tolkien observer.
Tolkien. Yeah, I am the Tolkien observer.
Tolkien Tolkien.
Hey everybody, it's John. I'm the second tower.
Oh, God.
John.
Mr. President, there's a second.
John.
It's two towers. Oh.
Yee.
Colton.
It is I, Mimi.
Well, we're starting off strong today. I'm very, very interested in this energy. I don't know how to go off of that now.
We gotta find a nice, even plane.
So, everyone here had seen this movie before. Yes, we're getting off of that topic, Tyler.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Everyone has seen this before, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
How long had it been for all of you guys since the last time you saw this one?
Right at 2 years, which is sad.
Same.
Right at two years for you?
No. Too long. It was too long.
Oh, too long?
It. It
oh.
I think I'm in the same boat. I think it's been about 2 years since I saw the trilogy for the first time.
2 years with y'all. Yeah.
No, I watched it at some point last year in the last, probably the last 3 or 4 months. I watched the whole extended edition trilogy.
Yeah. I try and watch it once a year.
Yeah.
So that's my whole
thing. Well, we have it on record. Rick cares more than Samuel does about Lord of the Rings.
It's true.
Oi, I have been waiting to watch it on the podcast. Although that might be actually be true.
Drama.
You know, this movie came out in 2002. I'm jumping right in because, you know, this kind of has to just, like, tie in with the first one. Because, you know, as Samuel sees it as just kind of one gigantic movie. So I'm just going to dive right in.
The only thing I'll say about it for my version, like, my part of the research is that it was a little bit unfortunate. You know, we just made the joke. But this movie came out right at a year after the 9/11 attacks.
Oh.
Oh wow!
So
nice.
You know that was that. You know I couldn't find any information about it. You know the studio had to at least think about.
There was a guy that started a petition.
Yeah.
For Peter Jackson to rename the movie because he thought he was naming it after the terrorist attack.
Oh wow!
Yikes!
Yeah, exactly.
The
big,
council
big
has awarded
yikes.
You a singular yike.
Yeah.
Also, fun fact about the name The Two Towers in the movie, they actually change it from in the book. In the book, The Two Towers is the Orthanc and Minas Morgul, and then in the movie, they change it to the Orthanc and Beard Dur. So, mm-hmm. Yay.
And if you don't know,
now you know.
Well, well, this movie came out in 2002. It was directed by Peter Jackson, written by Fran Walsh and Philippa Boyens, based on the book by J.R.R. Tolkien. Good Lord, I can't say it either. And stars Elijah Wood as Frodo Baggins, Sir Ian McKellen as Gandalf the White, and Viggo Mortensen as Aragorn. You can watch this with a Max subscription or buy or rent it on Redbox, Prime Video, YouTube, and Google Play. And the IMDb summary for this, Samuel, what would you say that you think the summary is for this movie?
This is my least favorite new game
I
we're
love
doing.
It. It's super fun.
I hate it. Because it puts me on the spot in a way that I
well,
really
you know what?
Don't
Let me,
like.
You know what, Samuel? You're right. Rick cares more anyway. Rick, what do you think the summary
strong
would
point.
Be?
Sure. So the summary says that the Fellowship of the Ring has been broken, and now they must pursue their goals along separate paths.
Okay,
wow.
Yeah.
Solid.
So that's actually not far off. They just get a little more specific in the summary. So while Frodo and Sam edge closer to Mordor with the help of the shifty Gollum, I like that, the divided Fellowship makes a stand against Sauron's new ally Saruman and his hordes of Isengard. And Samuel did all his research on the last one. So if you're curious about all of Peter Jackson's and the writer's other stuff, you can just go listen to that episode. What is happening? What is this, like, interaction?
I actually looked right at Tyler when you said shifty.
You said the shifty golem. Wow, shifty is a weird word, and Colton looks directly at me, and I was like, why?
He took it personally. I didn't mean it that way.
Anyway. Well, this one is my favorite in the trilogy, and I know it's Colton's favorite in the trilogy as well.
So good.
Is this anybody else's favorite out of the trilogy?
No, as a matter of fact, it's my least favorite out of the trilogy.
Oh, cringe.
Really?
All right, that's divorce. That's my favorite.
That doesn't mean I don't like it, because again, I also view the trilogy more as one giant movie, but in terms of, it's where some of the deviations from the book get the most off, and it's
and
just,
true.
To me, it feels a little rambling at times compared to the first one and the third one. It suffers a little bit from that middle passage where they try and make, not that the victory over Saruman wasn't a huge thing in the books, but they... And not that Helm's Deep wasn't a big thing in the books, but at the end of this movie, you almost feel like, we won! And that's not really how you should necessarily feel. I also think they committed absolute character assassination on Faramir in this film.
Yes, they did.
And,
I think part of the challenge is they're telling two parallel stories that were very different. You've got the highly action-packed Battle of Helm's Deep climax happening over here, while on the other side you've got Frodo, Sam, and Gollum Schmeagol sneaky trying to get their way into Mordor, and it kind of goes back and forth, and you're getting all you're getting all amped up about let's go fight the orcs in Helm's Deep, and then you kind of go over to this, all right, we're walking through a swamp.
And see, here's the funny thing about that. So yes. But also, that's kind of how it was in the books, just longer swaths of each of them. And I remember reading the
not
books.
Only longer swaths, they're split half and half.
Yeah, the whole book.
The first half of the book is...
Okay, maybe not in Return of the King, though. Because what I remember is getting to... When reading the books, I felt the exact opposite about how I felt watching the movies. In the movies, it's like you just said, I want to go back to the Gandalf, Aragorn, Legolas storyline. I'm like, okay, the Frodo Sam stuff is cool, but let's get back to that because that's really cool. In the books, it's the opposite. I was like, take me back to Frodo and Sam in the book and leave all of that away from me.
I feel completely the same way in this movie specifically. In the books, the Frodo and Sam stuff is phenomenal.
Yes.
It's so good.
Yes.
And battle scenes in books just aren't going to be the same as in movies. That being said, specifically because... Although it gives us a fantastic monologue from Sean Astin. But I really don't like the changes to the story that they made with the Faramir plot. Mm-hmm. And so for that reason, in this movie, I'm like, no, give me the Aragorn stuff. That plot hits a lot harder for me in this movie just because I get so, not upset, but almost disappointed by the... I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. By the Faramir plot, because he was one of... I'm not going to say he's my favorite character in the books, but he's up there.
Yeah.
And he's just not that in the movies.
Yeah.
And I think... I don't know. I think for me, the amount of love I have for just the plots in this movie, even though they are changed and even... Like, not all of them, because, you know, obviously the ones that were, like, inserted for no reason. Like, the whole Arwen Aragorn... weirdness.
Well, or like, even the weirdness, again, it results in some good scenes, so, like, it's well done, but even the weirdness with, like, the fake out of Aragorn's death. Like, I have no opposition to throwing in that warg fight scene. That's not in the books at all. It's a cool scene. It gives you some good action. It's a good action set piece in the middle of the film.
It gives you,
like,
one of the worst moments in the film. We'll come back to it. Yeah.
But then it gives you this weird fake out that fools nobody and doesn't really add anything to the plot. It just wastes time.
Yeah.
In an already long movie.
Yeah, it is a flawed movie, but I think I just love these plot lines so much that this has to still be my favorite one. Like, even the Frodo Sam stuff is all just like the middle of their stuff. But I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Also because I live for Gollum. I think he's fantastic and I love him. So as much Gollum as I can get makes me happy.
Also, let it be clear that these are the nittiest of picks.
Yes. No, I love these plot lines. And I know that Tyler hates the Ent plot line with Merry and Pippin. Oh, I love the Ent plot line with Merry and Pippin.
I never said I hated it. I just said I did not like it.
You're the worst.
Tyler's being attacked.
It's not about attacking you.
You know,
it's that you said it on the last podcast, so I was just throwing it out there because I was watching it, I was crying.
I just
maybe we
it.
Should get into it as we get into the plot.
Yes.
Instead of
yes. to cover.
We'll get there.
Are we going to do everybody else's overarching
yeah.
thoughts?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I will. okay, so this movie was definitely longer.
Get ready for the next one.
But I definitely found a way to ride it this time where I was able to sit down and enjoy it.
Okay.
And I was taking it in bite-sized pieces with ample things to be fiddling with my hands, which was good. That being said, it's the same thing about the other movie, is that this is a very, like, I struggle with finding things to say about this movie because I feel like everything that I've said has already been said in so many different ways by so many people who are so much smarter than I am. I like the movie for all the same reasons y'all do. Maybe not all the same, maybe not all the reasons, but I think it's a good movie that was entertaining and fun. They're just long.
Okay. Anybody else?
I'm just a sucker for action, and this has it's chock full of it, great story moments, and a lot of great comedic moments as well that I forget in this particular film.
It gives birth to my favorite... to my favorite joke in the entire series, Danielle, which is the counting
yeah.
joke back
yes.
and forth between
yes.
Yes.
That still only counts as one.
The throw me is
that,
very funny.
Well, that was in the third.
That joke in our first D&D campaign, Samuel,
yeah.
or in mine. I absolutely love that one, and so much of the Legolas action kills me in this, but we'll get there.
He surfed down.
He surfed down.
It's cool.
No,
don't take this from me.
No, I'm saying I love it. Like,
so
every
good.
Time it happens, I'm obsessed with it. Any thoughts from you, Amy?
The only thing I'll throw out there is, which I'm sure we'll get into, is it gives birth to.
It's catching on.
It is. Gosh, I hope this is the right movie. It is. It was there. Was Gollum's monologue between him.
Yes,
and
a thousand times
and
yes.
Smeagol,
yes.
Because I swear to God, that is literally my life. Most days, where it's like, the one side's like, yes.
Do we need to talk?
I don't care.
Colton,
the other side's
Colton,
like,
that's what we call a red flag.
And I'm like,
what a confession. What a confession to make on Banner Box.
Yes.
I feel like I identify with Gollum. I mean, he wants to kill people all the time.
Don't we all have that dark and light that's constantly
no.
with
and now she's
battle.
Taking martial arts classes.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
oh
be,
my
be
God,
afraid,
she's
be
a
afraid. No.
She's a black belt.
But yeah, I think I legit teared up with that monologue because it just hit in a different way. And I was like, that is so good. So yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. We'll get there later,
yes.
But Andy Serkis is just...
An
the
absolute
fact
phenom.
That he has not been nominated for an Oscar for either this or Planet of the Apes is criminal.
Well, it's the rules, right?
Yeah.
You have to appear
yeah.
on screen.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
And that's why I've said they need to create a new... They need to create a new
category.
Spot. Yeah, a new category.
Yeah.
For best motion
like
performance
capture
or something
capture
like that. Because,
whatever, yeah.
And here's the thing.
Get away with that rule.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
it was
yes.
still amazing acting, regardless
exactly.
of
exactly.
his getting mocaps.
Yeah. I adore him as Gollum. That being said, if you have not seen the new Planet of the Apes trilogy,
ooh, yeah.
everything he does in that trilogy blows his performance as a Gollum away.
Really?
They're very good.
They are... They are maybe my. They're probably at least top five, maybe top three of my favorite movie trilogies
of all
time.
Planet of the Apes movie.
They are
very
phenomenal.
Good.
They will make you cry like a little baby.
I didn't think that they were going to be that good, and then I was very pleasantly surprised. Incredible.
We'll be doing it at some point.
Rick, apparently. Do you have any overarching thoughts before we dive in?
No, let's just get into it and. and we'll cover it. I love it, but let's just go on.
Okay. Well, awakening from a dream of Gandalf fighting the Balrog in Moria, Frodo Baggins finds himself, along with Samwise Gamgee, lost in the Emmanuel near Mordor. They discover that they are being tracked by Gollum, a former bearer of the One Ring. Capturing Gollum, Frodo takes pity and allows him to guide them, reminding Sam that they will need Gollum's help to infiltrate Mordor. Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli pursue a band of Uruk-hai to save their companions Merry and Pippin, entering the Kingdom of Rohan. The Uruk-hai are ambushed by a group of Rohirrim, allowing Merry and Pippin to escape into Fangorn Forest. Meeting Aragorn's group, the Rohirrim's leader, Éomer, explains that he and his men have been exiled by Rohan's king, Théoden, who is under the control of Saruman, and his servant, Grima Wormtongue, which that guy grosses me out more than anybody in the
Brad Dourif
world.
He did a phenomenal job being that disgusting.
How did I not know that was...
No, what? Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
really?
Brad Dourif.
What's happening?
Yeah. Is Grima Wormtongue.
I don't know who that is.
Just Chucky, right?
Yes, I don't know. Yes, I remember looking him up.
I knew
Grima Wormtongue is Chucky. How about that?
I know him from the first Dune movie.
Oh,
like,
yes.
The 1984.
Oh, wait, who was he in that?
He was Spider.
That's how Rick's got all the information, because he cares.
He was Baron Harkonnen's... What do they call him? Mentat. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Not lying.
That
anyway,
I
yeah.
I believe you.
Grima Wormtongue is one of the most appalling characters in the most intentional and amazing way ever.
Yeah.
He's just so good. He's just... Ugh. Every time I look at him, I my skin crawls. And him,
trash.
Him in that scene where, like, you know, Éomer goes and basically, like, you know, choke holds him. And then he's just, like, really gross looking over his shoulder at Eowyn as she's leaving.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, I hate him. I hate him.
It's just Peter Pettigrew. But, like, obviously they got... Obviously they got it from Lord of the Rings.
No. He's Peter Pettigrew, but way worse.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Peter Pettigrew
yes.
is just, like, sniveling.
But it's that same
trope. Wormtongue is, like, actively slimy and disgusting. Like,
and if he had died... Helm's Deep would not have probably happened the way it did.
Yeah, if they had killed him.
Yes! That's why you should show your enemies no mercy.
And and also just massive spoilers for the next movie, but he also has a much larger part to play.
Oh, I completely forgot whatever
yep.
he does in the third one.
Oh, yeah, because... no, we'll get into it when we get there, because
yep.
I know a fun fact about that.
That's okay.
Cool.
Is it the Christopher Lee?
Yep.
Of course it is.
Okay, yes, I'm the president of the Christopher Lee fan club. All right.
I bet you still haven't listened to his heavy metal album.
I haven't.
So are you really, or is Rick just out-fanning all of us tonight?
Rick's just trying to prove that none of us are actually passionate about the things that we love.
No, I mean, and I can't, who's the actor that plays Amor?
Carl Urban, who
yeah.
is just phenomenal. And this was kind of his big start because he's a Kiwi actor. He's from New Zealand. And so that's why he got cast in this. And now he's just in so much. Because
he played Judge Dredd, right?
Judge
yep.
Dredd. Mm-hmm. He was Bones in the latest Star Trek movies.
Billy Butcher and the Boys.
The Boys, yeah.
Yep.
He's
okay.
awesome. And he does such a great job. Amor is so badass.
Yeah,
Amor is awesome.
Zed,
yeah.
I
love him.
He's Zed in Ragnarok.
Yeah, he's in Ragnarok. He's got
that's right.
16s.
Yep. That is him. Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. He's a chameleon.
Well, Éomer believes Merry and Pippin were killed during the raid, but leaves the group two horses. In Fangorn, Aragorn's group encounters Gandalf, who, after his fight against the Balrog, was resurrected as Gandalf the White to help save Middle-earth. So, Samuel, I had to, like, stop the movie and have him fully explain it to me, because the first time around, I didn't fully grasp what was happening when he said, "I am Saruman." And Samuel, can you explain it again? Because the way that you explained it was
yeah.
really
well,
good.
And Rick, feel free to jump in whenever sure. you want. But the whole thing with it is that he, you know, I'm Saruman, or rather Saruman as he should have been. There's the White Wizard, who was the leader of the wizards. And when Saruman turned, he kind of gave that up. So he was still masquerading as the White Wizard. But in terms of from the order of the wizards and their place in the world... Saruman could no longer really be the White Wizard. So when Eru or whoever brought Gandalf the Grey back and sent him back to finish his mission, he made him the White Wizard, the head of the Order, and as such, he couldn't even remember Gandalf because Gandalf was just his human name given to him. That's not his real name. So he couldn't even remember that was his name because he's coming back as the more, a lot closer to the Maiar version of himself versus the appearing human version of himself. Huh. And so he comes back and he's like, yeah, I'm basically Saruman because I'm really who Saruman has been for the last 200 years is who I am now.
Hmm.
And that was something that I didn't grasp when, like, either of the other two times I watched it. Or at least I didn't fully grasp it. Like, and so I was like, tell me exactly what's going on. And that was really interesting.
But that was one of those scenes that was just lifted perfectly from the book and put on the screen.
Word for word, like, line for line.
That whole scene of them rolling up to the front gates and just, like, you know, him playing off on the, oh, you're going to take the walking stick from a feeble old man. Yeah. And then the two, or the three of them fanning out and just beating the hell out of all the guards while he's just slowly walking up. I'm like, this is a great
shot.
That
is straight out of a D&D campaign.
Yes, it is. That's when the whole party gathers around for the one person's backstory moment.
Yes. No, I love that.
That's so sick.
But yes, so Gandalf leads the trio to Rohan's capital, is it Edoras?
Mm-hmm.
Where Gandalf frees Théoden from Saruman's control in probably my favorite display of Gandalf's power so far, which is him kind of doing almost like a lesser version of magic because he's like, oh, this is just like a spell. You know, this is something I can just, you know, dispel magic and it's gone. And then it hit, like, you know, it reaches like in, like kind of into his brain and he's like, oh, this is active. This is a connection. And he like turns it up to 11 and just like fires back on him. And I love the, I don't know. I'm obsessed with even a small failure followed by a success after, like, learning. Even if it's that instant, I don't care. Like, that's my favorite thing as a character, trying something, realizing, oh, I actually have to, like, you know, turn it up and, like, turn up the heat on this. I just love that.
But
it's one of my favorites.
And that, I don't know how they did it. Whatever that effect was where they made Théoden younger.
I told her that blend. Yeah, I told her while we were watching it, that might be my favorite CGI in the whole trilogy.
It's so good.
That moment is phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, so you all saw this long after 2002, right?
Mm-hmm.
So seeing that in 2002 is like, how the hell did they do that? It was just amazing.
Yeah.
It's
just insane how good it looks for the time. Like, every time...
Even for today. If they did that in a movie today, it'd be like, hell yeah.
It would. It holds up. I mean, it's the same thing with... It's the same thing with Gollum.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
These are graphics, like, when you look at... When you compare it to Dobby, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the time, in Harry Potter and Chamber of Secrets, you're like... Ooh.
It is a little rough.
No, I thought it was.
There are moments. His eyes are a little rough.
But there are a lot of moments where it's like, for the time, it's like, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
As the movies got older, the animation got, in my opinion, a little worse, like a little rougher. And so it felt like they were trying too hard. And so where it's with Gollum, it's just like consistently like a masterclass. And then you have the de-aging stuff, the cuts to the miniature work. We'll get there, but in Helm's Deep, the miniature work that they used and how that interwoven like with the live action stuff, I was like, this is incredible.
Well, this will probably come, I don't know if this is in the stuff later, but you know, they only planned Andy Serkis to do the voice for Gollum. But then when Peter Jackson saw him, he was like, no, now you're going to be doing the mocap.
Yeah, he started doing the voice, and he, like, hopped up on his chair and was, like, doing all this stuff.
Oh,
and Peter Jackson was like, well, I mean, like, there we go.
Well, but the thing is, they had already started doing the animations for Gollum. They'd done, like, 8 months or more worth of work.
No way.
They had to throw it all away.
And I was also...
And redo it because of Andy Serkis being so awesome.
Well, and I was also explaining to Danielle while we were watching it, a big difference in then versus now is now, actually, we don't do motion capture anymore. Motion capture is very rare. We do performance capture.
Yeah.
There's a very big difference because what Andy Serkis had to do is he had to go on set and he would wear either a white or a green jumpsuit. And he would do the scenes, he would interact with the environment. So like the big scene where I was pointing out to her is the scene in the river. All those water splashes, that's Andy Serkis. But the movements of the Gollum figure there are not captured on set. They didn't have the technology to do that. So he wore the suit, and they would have to actually then erase him out completely and then go back in,
get him in a
green screen studio and actually have the motion capture suit on, because they couldn't take it out into the environment. Actually get him to do the motion capture suit and match up his movements with what he had done on set, and then
so every scene had to be done.
Take his performance and put it into where they had erased him.
That's insane.
So Andy Serkis did film the whole thing twice.
What a
wow.
Versus now, where they're just like, yeah, they put the dots on you and you go out there with everybody and it's fine.
And you have to
mimic
your
movements? And now you can do it and actually have models on set, like, copying you as you're doing it, which is just crazy.
That's insane. I can't believe he had to do the whole thing twice but mirror himself.
And he didn't get an Oscar.
That's really
dumb. He definitely deserves one.
That's really
dumb.
He was robbed.
Yes. Well, Aragorn stops Theoden from executing Wormtongue. Bad call. Who flees.
We just talked about it being a good call.
Learning of Saruman. Well, I just think Wormtongue's gross, so I would have loved for him to die. But, you know, whatever. It's good for the plot, I guess.
Gandalf would disagree with you.
He is also more of a tragic figure in the books, Wormtongue. Mm. He's a lot less of a sleazeball and a lot more of a...
That is
guy
true.
Who is stuck in a bad working relationship.
Yes.
That's one way to put it.
While learning of Saruman's plans to destroy Rohan with his Uruk-hai army, Theoden evacuates his citizens to the fortress of the Hornburg at Helm's Deep. Gandalf departs to find Éomer and his followers, hoping they will fight for their restored king. Aragorn befriends Theoden's niece Eowyn, who becomes infatuated with him. I mean... I can't blame her. when the refugees traveling to Helm's Deep are attacked by Saruman's warg-riding orcs, Aragorn falls from a cliff and is presumed dead. He is found by Theodred's horse Brego and rides to Helm's Deep, witnessing Saruman's army marching to the fortress. I do love, like, I know it's so out of nowhere, but I do love, like, Brego being the one to go and, like, find him. I don't know. I just, I like that. I know it's random and pointless, but I enjoy it.
That was one of Viggo Mortensen's brushes with death.
Yep.
Oh, that's right. Brego is the horse. I was like, who?
No, Brego's the horse. Yeah.
That's why. Okay. Because that it was one of those like well yeah, because it's canon. Danielle's a horse girl, so it fits.
Track. Was, but sure.
No, like because that's not too dissimilar to in Oh, goodness me. The Lone Ranger. Mm. You like that bit as well.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I also just love when animals have that kind of connection with a character in a story where they come and they save them or they help them in some huge way. Like, yeah.
They become the familiar.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, I just enjoy it. But in Rivendell,
no,
this is the plot that doesn't exist. Arwen is told by her father Elrond that Aragorn will not return. He reminds her that if she remains in Middle-earth, she will outlive Aragorn by thousands of years, and she reluctantly departs for Valinor. None of that happened. Elrond is contacted by Galadriel of Lothlorien, who convinces him that the elves should honor their alliance to men, and they dispatch an army of elves to Helm's Deep.
And of note, it did happen just like 10 years prior.
Yeah, I was about to say, it just didn't happen in the time span of this story. In Fangorn, Merry and Pippin meet Treebeard, an Ent.
Played by Gimli.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Yep. Treebeard
played.
That
same actor. John
no.
Rhys Davies voiced.
I did not know that.
Yep.
That's super cool.
He had to do something while he was out on the injured list. Because that was the other game that we played in this, which I might actually put in the drinking game, although actually it might be too much, is every time that it's actually John Rhys Davies. Because in this film in particular, Gimli is barely ever played by him. The only shots that are him are the up-close shots, and you can tell because any shot that is not a close-up on his face, Gimli's face cannot be seen. Mm. It's all his stunt double in this film. Because he hurt his back really bad during filming, and he just, like, couldn't be on set for months.
Yes, but convincing Treebeard that they are allies, they are brought to an Ent council where the Ents decide not to take part in the coming war. Pippin asks Treebeard to take them in the direction of Isengard, where they witness the deforestation caused by Saruman's war effort. Enraged, Treebeard and the Ents storm Isengard, trapping Saruman in his tower.
Honestly, goaded move by
Pippin.
Pippin.
Yeah.
And also, this is where I just could not disagree more strongly with Tyler, who doesn't like Merry and Pippin.
See, I love that whole plot because, you know, So Tyler, we are at the Ent plot line now.
Ah, perfect.
Yes.
Mid.
No. So they, you know, they're on this journey. They only get abducted because they're, you know, they're hobbits, and all that they were told is that a hobbit has this thing. So of course they get taken, which also allows Frodo and Sam to, like, you know, scurry on out of there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they end up like escaping into the trees and go with you know, big tree men. And I just love this plot so much because it also gets to show you so much more of, one, the fact that Pippin's actually very clever and mm-hmm. that Merry has some fire in him mm-hmm. where, like, you get so much more just from them in this, like, in this bit. And you're going to get more in the next movie. But you get so much more here, and I just...
Because what did he say? The closer you are from danger, closer you are to danger, the farther you are from harm?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's like, that
yeah.
doesn't make any sense.
Inescapable love.
But...
he had some of the best comedic moments. I mean...
But then again, you are very small.
My favorite is them groaning and grumbling. It's like, have y'all made a decision yet? No. You just said good morning.
And see, that moment is the most, because we said in the last movie, I don't know if we're going to stick with this casting, but we said with the casting of the last movie that me and Tyler were Merry and Pippin.
It was my vote.
And that was the most accurate portrayal of our ADHD impatience, of being like, all right, are we done? And then being like, oh no, we hadn't even started on it, and just... having immediate anxiety.
I will also say that I'll give Peter Jackson props because the Ents is a very hard storyline to adapt especially because they actually had to condense it a bunch because the whole section is a lot longer. Specifically, the Ent moot is a lot longer in the books. It goes on for days.
Yeah.
Being able to condense it and like portray their way of speaking. And show just enough of it where you get the picture and then cut away and then we'll come back, you know, later. I thought it was very well done because the Ents, it would have been very easy to do them very, very, very poorly.
Yes.
I will say, I forgot the whole height joke. I don't know how I forgot the whole sipping from, like, the little well.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow completely missed that the first time.
Yeah, and then they took Old Man Willow and put him in, put him here in Fangorn instead of being originally the whole bit with the tree trying to eat them. That's in Hobbiton. Or not in Hobbiton, but it's in
Bree. It's east. It's
yeah. East, it's where Tom Bombadil rescues.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because that was in kind of like the Barrow-wide section, right?
No,
Something like that. Something like that.
Isn't it true that the guy who played Gimli voiced the tree?
Yeah, you were out of the room for that. Yeah, but yes, that was something I didn't know until they just said it.
I didn't know until I saw the Everything Great About the Lord of the Rings, and I was like, oh, no kidding.
Oh.
I had to fuel up on good things about this.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
The look on Rick's face.
Remind me, there's a video or two we need to watch after we're done here. Remind me of that.
I will.
Okay. Well, Aragorn arrives at Helm's Deep, bringing word that Saruman's army is close, and Theoden must prepare for battle despite being vastly outnumbered.
Talk about an entrance.
The greatest opening of doors ever.
Yes, in the history of Dordom.
Dordom.
It was actually it was pretty epic.
That was a man opening doors.
That's
right
he
there.
Be doing that though
for the patriarchy. Yes.
Also, I really love like him walking in. Everyone's surprised, and he walks up to Legolas, and all Legolas says is "You're late," and that's it. And Aragorn almost looks like kind of offended, but then he sees that like Legolas never had a doubt that he was going to show up, and he's just like, "Oh, that's kind of cool." Like, yeah. All right.
And then he's like, "You look like."
Well, the army of elves from Lothlorien arrives, as does Saruman's army, and a battle ensues. The Uruk-hai breach the outer wall with explosives, and during the ensuing charge, kill the elves' commander, Haldir.
Can you tell that Tolkien hated modern warfare when he made the bad guys have gunpowder?
Oh, yeah, that's another, but yeah.
Dude, the scene with the elves and Haldir showing up is so good. Yes.
That scene was awesome.
So good.
Them shooting Alliance over...
Alliance of men and elves.
Man's head
over like Aragorn's yeah. head from behind.
I literally
yes.
commented on it. I was like, Aragorn's got some serious trust for these
yes
people.
Where he's just like, all right, and it's whistling like past his ears
yeah.
like, but
well, because he's like the courage incarnate character
yes.
like he's so freaking
the
brave
elf
and awesome
fighter. They're just I mean with the swords just one after the other perfectly coming up mm-hmm. jumping over each other. I'm just
the
like why are you so cool
yes
yes
that's so cool.
There was it Samuel, was it this movie with Theoden where I commented on his sword fighting, like the way that he fought? There was
yes.
a character that like duel fought, and I thought it was Theoden. Am I wrong?
I think so.
Where he like he just like fought with one
mm-hmm.
hand the whole time,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, I love that they've got different styles. That's so cool.
Yes, that made me very happy as well.
Yes, that's awesome.
I will also say, we skipped over this, but I just got to say it because it's one of my favorite parts about this movie. Is what I do love about this movie, and one reason why I absolutely adore it, even though it's probably my least favorite, is Rohan is probably my favorite place in Middle Earth.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Just the kingdom of Rohan is phenomenal. I love. It's like this like little mini quest in the middle of everything else going on, you know, having to save Rohan. The names are just my favorite in the whole trilogy. Even the names of like Edoras, like what a town name. Like that's, mwah, just, I love everything with Rohan.
Also, we didn't talk about it, but wasn't the flag coming off an accident that
yeah.
they
yeah.
did made a plot thing?
Wait, I heard that the flag coming off was planned, but then the way it fell was not supposed to happen, but it fell the perfect way, so they kept it.
No. I read it was complete
yeah.
complete coincidence.
Really?
It's kind of opposite in that it came, if I remember correctly, the shot with Eomin is where it came off, and then they were all like, oh, that's really cool, and added the shot of it falling next to Aragorn as they entered
yeah.
in, because
huh.
they were like, symbolism.
Huh. Yeah, I heard it different. That's crazy, though. Either way, it's awesome.
Yeah. Also, Helm's Deep has Legolas's one quote unquote failure where
he didn't do anything wrong.
No, he didn't do anything wrong.
I know what you're talking about.
But he hit the guy, but he could but
like
he didn't kill him.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that's the only way that they could make him fail is still make him hit the target three times.
But him
just couldn't
be
bring him down.
Immune to piercing damage apparently as he just like runs.
Gotta through
go
the for
whole
the headshot,
thing.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's the thing is the whole thing is the guy's dying anyway, so he's not gonna go down with one
no.
arrow. He's
yeah.
literally just forward momentum.
Yeah, charging to his death.
Yeah, I mean he kind of it's like the. It's a little bit of a parallel with Boromir, where Boromir knows he's going to die, but he stays up and takes three shots
uh-huh.
to keep fighting until he dies. And then in this one, same thing. He took three arrows and was like, I'm dead anyway. May as well explode, you
yeah.
know? And just like, that
is going to hey, can y'all hold up for a minute? I still got to explode.
I'm dying anyway. I got to explode. I got to explode real quick.
You're going to make me late.
Well, the defenders retreat into the keep, where Aragorn convinces Theoden to meet the Uruk-hai in one last charge.
Right up with me.
Mm-hmm. At dawn, they've got glorious
for
purpose.
For wrath and ruin.
At dawn, as the defenders are overwhelmed, Gandalf and Éomer arrive with the Rohirrim, turning the tide of the battle.
In an absolutely
so cool.
epic moment.
It gives me chills every time.
It's
so
awesome.
Good.
Well, it's also, Gandalf did a call forward to it, because isn't the sun the flame of, wait, what is it?
No.
The flame of what?
Udun?
No, the Flame of Honor, that's his ring.
Yeah. Man, my guy got it all wrong.
Tyler had done his homework to,
I
like,
did
get
a lot
ready.
Of homework
what
on
he's
this.
Writing,
so
he's
like
Keeper of the Flame and all of that. He's referring to his magic ring, one of the three elven magic rings.
I thought in Middle-earth they call the sun the Flame of whatever.
Maybe?
And so that was the whole thing,
but
is that he's the Keeper of that, and then he was using the sun blind him.
Hey, I appreciate
that. Here's the thing, it's possible that it's related to the magic ring.
Okay.
I just, if so, I'm unclear on that.
I'm betting 1,000 over here, y'all.
Sun to
Blind him.
That's pretty good.
No, I also just love the moment when they're charging down and the armies meet and Gandalf on Shadowfax just jumps into the crowd, like, my past all of them, just, like, in there.
The first mosh pit ever recorded.
Real. Yeah, so Anor is the Elvish word. Danny's. Anor is the Elvish word for sun, but it's also a reference to, it's like the name of the ring that he's,
okay,
that he's wielding.
Okay. All right. Good.
I heard the tightness in your chest release. I was like,
how is the guy going to get all this stuff wrong? Like, it makes me question all of his other videos and all the other cool stuff I thought about those movies.
People on the internet are never wrong.
That's not how this is supposed to work.
Cut to Tyler's YouTube history and it's all very important things from the same guy. How to do CPR. Started a question.
I really like how in this movie they got CPR right as they're just like pounding on his chest.
Well, the surviving Uruk-hai flee into Fangorn Forest and are killed by the trees.
Which is awesome.
That's awesome.
So good.
I like the guy who got caught on fire and then got put out by the water.
Oh, the tree?
Yes, the tree.
Yes, because they're fighting in Isengard, and I saw that tree go up in flames, and I was like, oh no, I don't want the tree to die. And then he just gets immediately put out, and I was like, oh, he's fine. Everything's fine.
That man said, I'm a little hot. Hold on a second.
I can't believe all the trees took down Isengard.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, of course. They're gigantic. And also, as soon as they open the dam, they can just sink their roots into the ground, and they just stand there, and they're like, everyone else is wrecked.
No, strategy.
Yeah, well, and it's also, you know, it's the arrogance of Saruman. He's all like, yeah, send all the Uruks over here to fight Rohan, because there's nobody else who can hurt me. Meanwhile, they reference the fact that him and Treebeard used to be good friends.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he just, like, completely is like, yeah, don't even worry, like, about the Ents. And then
meanwhile, here comes Treebeard.
Here comes the Ents.
Yeah.
Here comes all of Treebeard.
Treebeard breaks through the wood line and sees all the trees.
Oh my gosh.
These trees were my friends.
I felt genuine first sorrow and then actual rage.
Dude, me too. Like when he comes out and you hear just the absolute, like, how shattered he is to see all of that. And then when he walks on to Isengard and he's just like, you could see the rage.
A wizard should know better!
Yes, I'm just like, yes!
Dude, he got my adrenaline pumping!
And the roar that he does.
I will
say, oh my gosh.
If y'all have the time, I've showed this to Samuel already, but there's this guy who does music and he takes a few of Tolkien's poems and turns them into songs. And I believe it's the Ent March that is in the book. It is a phenomenal march, and I do recommend it. I'll have to send the video in the group chat. But
okay.
It's a great, great song.
The Ents are great, and again, it's his most over, you know, for Mr. Not Liking Allegory, it's his most beat you over the head thing is trees beat metal.
Oh, I love it. Because you can also, the way that they animated the Ents is so good, because you can actually see, like, the strength that they have and see them as a formidable force to be reckoned with, and not just, here comes a bunch of branches, like, running through.
Yeah.
They actually look like they could wreck shop as they're coming through. But, yes, so
like
they're killed.
The whole forest just stood up and was just like, all right. Let's dance.
Well, they are killed by the trees, and Gandalf warns that Sauron will retaliate. Gollum leads Frodo and Sam through the dead marshes to the Black Gate, but recommends they enter Mordor by another route. Frodo and Sam are captured by rangers of Ithilien led by Faramir, younger brother of the late Boromir. Frodo helps Faramir catch Gollum to save him from being killed by the rangers. Yes, Samuel?
Just the character assassination. It's painful. Painful.
Of who?
In the books, Faramir is just one of the most badass, like...
He is.
Like, up there with Aragorn, like...
Super noble.
Yeah, insane. Like, he never even considers. Like, Frodo is all like, yeah, bro, I got the Ring of Power. I'm taking it to destroy it. And Faramir's like, awesome. What can I do to help?
Wow.
Well, yeah, like, them getting taken back to... It's Osgiliath, right?
Yeah.
Never happens.
No, it's not in the books. He never even considers it. He's like, yeah, no.
What?
Because the whole thing... The whole picture of Faramir in the books is that he gets it. He gets that Gondor is weak and corrupted because he sees his father for who he is.
Yeah.
And so in the books, Faramir's like, yeah, no, in no world does the ring need to come anywhere near Gondor. That is a horrible idea.
Why would you change that?
And he's also, in the books, he grew up with Gandalf.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so, like, he knows the tales of Isildur and all that, and so he knows the lineage of the ring and what it does to Gondor. So as soon as he finds out about it, he's like, cool, yeah, nope, this isn't happening, let's just send you on your way.
How about that?
And he, like, just, you know, in the movies, they show him standing up to his father, but more as, like, a, like, trying to win his approval. Mm-hmm. In the books, he stands up to him like, yeah, no, I don't really care about your approval, I'm doing... Like, if you order me to go out there, I'll go out there, not because I'm trying to prove anything to you, but because you're the steward and it's my duty.
Wow.
Well, and that's also, like, you know, what kind of brings him, and they don't really show the progression of this relationship in the movie, but, you know, spoilers, he ends up with Eowyn.
Yeah, and just a beautiful love story. Yeah. They just take, like, a whole chapter and devote it to their love story
and really
in the
good.
Houses of Healing, and it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
She deserves love.
And in the books, Faramir is amazing, and so they are a fantastic perfect match.
Yeah.
But and all you see in the movie is just them like next to each other, and it's like, oh, they got together, I guess. Cool. like yeah, that I agree. I hadn't remembered all of that about his about how awesome he was in the books, but as you were talking, I was like, oh yeah, I remember some of those. Learning of the One Ring, Faramir takes his captives to Gondor to bring the ring to his father, Denethor.
Well, we gotta skip over the part where they capture and beat the hell out of Sméagol.
Yeah.
I hated that.
I mean...
I hated
that. Brutal.
Yeah. It's hard to watch.
Especially because Frodo genuinely did not think that they were gonna hurt him. They were I just need to get him away from the sacred pool so that he doesn't like get hurt.
Right.
And then so he's like, he's using the trust that Gollum has in him and is like, come on, like, you know,
listen,
come over here.
Master.
Yeah, listen. And he's like, okay, yeah. And then immediately they grab him and start beating the crap out of him. And I'm just like, oh my God, like, I hate it for everybody involved. Like, this sucks. Because then Frodo's immediately like, wait, you said you weren't going to hurt him. Like, stop, you know? Because
that
the whole
being
thing,
said, let's be real, Sméagol deserved it.
In that moment, I don't agree in that moment.
Oh, well, here's the thing. Gollum deserved it.
Yeah.
Sméagol
does
not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sméagol is a genuinely good guy.
Yes.
Sméagol did murder his brother.
Well,
he totally did that.
But we could argue that was the beginning of Gollum, because that was under the Ring's influence.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's why I love Gollum. Sméagol is awesome.
For murdering someone, you love Gollum because he murdered
people. I interchanged their names, and so, like, you know.
Was the flashback to Deagle and Sméagol finding the ring?
That didn't happen in this one.
That's in Return of the King.
Yeah, that's in the next
one.
Well,
the guy's actually
just triggered for me is... That was Andy Serkis on screen.
Yep.
He should have got the damn Oscar.
You're right.
Oh,
yo,
you're so
right. Found the loophole. Let's go
that's
for it.
Just Andy Serkis.
Let's call the Academy. We've got to lodge some complaints.
You've made
a
mistake.
I did. We'll get that Return of the King. I did have a massive problem with them using his voice for that scene. Mm. I hated it. I absolutely hated that he does the Gollum voice in the scene where he's just a normal hobbit. I'm like, no, you should have been like a progression of what his voice turned into. Mm. I hate it when he's just, especially when his brother doesn't. His brother's just talking like a normal human, then he's like, yeah.
the Gollum
voice.
Oh.
Oh my gosh. That just made me so happy. But passing through the besieged city of Osgiliath, Frodo tries to explain to Faramir the true nature of the ring, and Sam explains that Boromir was driven mad by its power. A Nazgul nearly captures Frodo, who falls under the ring's power, but Sam saves him and reminds a disheartened Frodo that they are fighting for the good still left in Middle-earth.
That was a heartbreaking scene. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So. When they fall down after he tackles him and
mm-hmm.
he comes up with the sword at his neck. Ooh,
and you see, not even a moment of Sam, like, try to fight him.
Yeah.
Just sitting there, like...
Because he knows he wouldn't do it.
And
like,
that,
that's the thing.
That's so crazy.
He's got the sword
on,
to his neck,
man.
And he trusts that he's not going to hurt him.
It's the it's your Sam line that I'm like, all right, and they're not in love. Come on.
They are in love.
They are super
they're
in love.
They're just not
in
gay.
Love.
They're not in gay love.
Samuel.
They're not in gay love.
They love each other, yes.
Yeah.
not in a sexual or romantic way.
I didn't say I sexual, but romantic. No, I absolutely not.
I think they should love each other like that. That'd be fun.
Well, that is my second totally favorite monologue of this movie is Sam just telling
Which one's your first favorite?
Is the Smeagol. Back and forth. But the whole, you know, Farmer's listening, and he's like, this is what life's all about, essentially. Mm-hmm. And what are the great stories that we all love?
That there's some good in this world.
Like, what is life but we root for the hero? That's without tragedy, without going down in the depths and having to pull yourself up and arise anew. That is what life is. That is what we live for. That's why we love these heroic tales. You're welcome.
Help me.
Well, impressed by Frodo's resolve, Faramir releases them. Feeling betrayed, Gollum decides he will reclaim the ring by leading Frodo to her upon arriving at Cirith Ungol.
Which, again, I will say, doesn't make a ton of sense in context of the movie that Faramir, after seeing Frodo take the ring and walk up to the Nazgul and almost put it on, that would change his mind to be like, you know what, yeah, I think we should send this guy into Mordor. It's like, I don't know. Like, I feel like that would actually kind of cause the opposite a little bit.
Maybe give the guy a little tune or something.
It was Sam's monologue that changed his mind.
I'm just saying in the context.
Sam
like,
is the true hero of the whole thing.
I mean, yes.
I mean, yes, he absolutely is.
Accurate, yeah. 100%. I can't carry the
report. Well, that was the Two Towers, guys.
Yeah.
I went on Amazon and found that the general consensus by viewers is fantastic. 92% of viewers rated it 5 stars. It took me, again, a very long time to find a positive review that wasn't a million years long. And a negative review that wasn't just, like...
Movie
bad.
Yeah, like...
It was too long.
My name's Tyler.
This sucks.
I hate things that are good and fun.
But I did find a couple of reviews. They're not, like, amazing, just because reviews for movies like this, I find, are very, very difficult, because they're not... What is happening in this corner?
I just hurt myself.
Are you
Keep
okay?
Going. I'm fine.
Okay.
Sorry.
Reviews for these kinds of movies are so hard because they're so loved by so many people that a positive review is always an essay, a 5-paragraph essay, and a negative review is just swill that means nothing. And so it's like, I can read these if y'all want, but I feel like they're
good,
not that important.
Not to want. Yeah.
They're
yeah.
not that important for these, I feel like. As far as winning awards, it was nominated for Oscars, 6 of them, and won 2 for Best Sound Editing and Best Visual Effects.
Can confirm both.
Deserved. Truly deserved, too.
Yeah.
All right, well, Mimi, you can't look at my screen for the game. Okay, what do you guys think this is rated out of 100 critically on Rotten Tomatoes?
Well, hold on, let me look it up.
I think it's around 92%.
Okay.
Damn it, that's what's on my card, too.
Well, then we'll just have to be right together.
This is critically?
Yes.
90.
Okay.
I was about to say 92, but just to be different, 91.
Okay.
See, here's the predicament you've put me in. Last time, it was the opposite of what it normally is, and the critics rated it really high. So now I'm confused. I'm going to go 87%.
Okay.
93.
Well, it's going to be Mimi because it's 95.
Oh,
wow.
Yep.
We all lowballed it.
Let's go critics.
Yep. And now for the audience score, also out of 100. I'm excited to hear Tyler's horse method.
Audience score out of 100. I think it's going to be slightly lower. I'm going to go 90%.
94.
Okay.
Come back to me.
Okay.
91 again.
Keep me honest.
What are you 89. Counting? How many horses?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
93.
Okay.
Horses were in.
Are you searching how many horses were in this movie?
Yes.
It was a lot.
Probably over 100.
Oh no, four horses died. That's terrible.
I would guess more like 400 some odd horses.
I would say there's probably 97 horses.
You can't call this the horse method, and you're gonna lose because of it.
You're right, and you're right.
And you did lose, but only
great.
But only by 1 point.
Oh, really?
Because it was 95 again.
Wow.
So that one goes to Rick.
See, I'm just sitting here thinking, surely there are at least 10% of people in this world are like Tyler and don't have the attention span for it. But it's only 5%.
But they also don't have the attention the span to go put a review on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, you're right.
Well, yeah,
they're the silent minority.
I'm so bored by the end of it, I don't even care about leaving the review. I'm doing something fun.
Well, out of 10 on IMDb, what do you guys think?
I mean, at least 5.
He's not wrong.
No, he's not.
I think it's going to be like 8.6.
Okay.
9.2.
Okay.
9.5.
Okay.
Can't go wrong with 9.1.
Sure you can.
9.0.
Okay.
9.3.
We got the nines covered.
Well, it's a tie between Samuel and Colton. It's 8.8.
Oh,
wow. Fools.
And, so the budget for this movie was $94 million, and it made...
It's not that much.
It made... $947.9 million.
Yo, we in the long line of work.
To a factor of 100? Yes.
And they're still getting released in the movie theaters relatively regularly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dude.
I will say, I was kind of disappointed. There aren't that many fun facts for this one. So, the ones that I did find.
Nonsense.
I think Rick came from.
So, let me say the ones I found, and then you tell me the ones that you found. So, what?
Nothing.
Okay. So the filming of the Helm's Deep sequences was so grueling and went on for so many months that Jackson gave all the extras a free t-shirt to commemorate the experience. There were so many extras that they would often recognize each other in New Zealand's main cities by wearing the shirts. On the front of the shirt was the statement, "I survived Helm's Deep," with the letter M struck out, indicating the hell of the experience. Two versions existed. One was in black with red printing on the back that read Lord of the Rings Uruk-hai Battalion, and the other in blue with silver printing that read the Lord of the Rings Elf Regiment.
That's so cool.
That's actually
cool. That's so
cool.
That's
actually awesome.
I thought that was really sick. This is probably, I'm not kidding, my favorite fun fact I have ever found for this show.
Okay.
They couldn't recruit enough men in the 6-foot height area
yep.
to play Uruk-hai, yep. so men from 5-foot high were cast as well, and they were affectionately nicknamed the Uruk-lo. That is my favorite one I have ever found.
I don't know if you have this one, but in a similar vein is the fact that most of the riders of Rohan are women in prosthetic beards. Because the Riders of Rohan, they called all the local riders in New Zealand and said, "We'll come pay you to bring your horses and be in this movie." And most of the local riders in New Zealand were women, so they got thrown in prosthetic beams.
Awesome. Dude, I'm jealous though because the Riders of Rohan armor, armor is incredible.
It's really sick.
Well, this was what?
What about his fun facts?
Well, I'm not done.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
What?
I thought you were done. I thought you were moving on to the next segment.
No.
When
Frodo and Sam are in Osgiliath, Sam says, "By rights, we shouldn't even be here." This was a
yep.
nod to the deviation the screenplay had taken from the book's storyline, because in the book, they never passed through Osgiliath. So I thought that was really cool.
Oh, that's cool.
The battle at Helm's Deep was edited down from 20 hours of footage, shot over a 4-month period with the rain machine
battering
down.
Somebody give me the 20-hour cut!
Exactly.
The rain machine what?
Battering down on the cast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The rain machine.
And the last thing I found was the Peter Jackson cameo, which he was
yep.
in there wearing chainmail armor at Helm's Deep and throws a spear at the attacking Uruk-hai.
That was him?
Yep.
Oh,
that was
cool.
him. And that's all I had. So what else? Did you have anything else, Rick?
I got a couple of little things. One was that it took them 7 months to build Helm's Deep.
Wow.
Both the practical and what they called a bigature. Not a miniature. It was so big that they couldn't call it a miniature anymore.
So
it became a bigature. It took them 7 months to build that. And then they blew it up.
Yeah. I mean,
crazy.
As you do.
And then the you remember there's a very vivid scene of one of the Rohan guys that didn't have an eye.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a guy. That was an actual guy who had lost his eye. He showed up for filming wearing an eye patch, and Peter Jackson was like, "Would you be willing to take the eye patch off and let us film you with your bare socket?" And he didn't want to do it at first, but then he was like, "Yeah, I'll do it." And apparently that had a big impact on him, and he became much more comfortable with going out and not having to wear an eye patch anymore.
Awesome. That's dope.
So that was pretty cool. The other one was, you know, he was very, on a lot of things that related to the book, he was very specific. He wanted to be true to the book. Mm-hmm. So if you notice, all of the orcs, the inside of their mouths are black.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they made them rinse their mouths with like this licorice mouthwash to stain the inside of their mouth, so the inside of their mouths would look black.
Oh, ooh, I wonder if that helped them to like make those like grimaces that they had to make all the time, like always baring their teeth and like drooling and stuff. Yeah. I wonder if that was like, if they were just like, well, this helps my character. Yeah.
Well, my character would do.
I think most everybody probably knows the scene where Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli show up at the battle of the where the Rohirrim killed the Uruk-hai.
Yeah, when he kicks
the helmet,
breaks his foot.
Actually, breaks two toes, and that's why he yells and falls to the ground.
Yeah, because
And they took three takes. First take, he didn't break any. Second take, he broke one. Third take, he broke two, and that's the one that's in the film.
So, but then he also, we mentioned when he went over into the river and was going down through the river, he actually went underwater for like a minute and they had to go in and get him because he was drowning.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, I think I actually did.
I did not know that.
Yeah, did hear about that for some more.
Then, at the Battle of Helm's Deep, things got out of hand and he broke a tooth.
Yep.
What?
He said, "Can I just get some super glue to glue my tooth in?" And the director was like, and that was actually a producer, said, "No, you're going to the dentist."
And the dentist he went to, so he went to the dentist in full costume.
Yeah.
No.
And like in a break, and it was Peter Jackson's personal dentist who he went to.
Oh my God. Wow.
Did he have to get his whole tooth replaced, I assume?
It was just
something like that. Yeah. Chip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Orlando Bloom also, in the filming of this one, fell off a horse and broke two ribs.
Because when they were running across during the chase sequence, Viggo Mortensen had broken his foot. Orlando Bloom had cracked his ribs, and there was something wrong with Gimli's knee.
Well, and Gimli was also just broken at this point. I will say, I didn't get a chance to talk about it, but I don't know. Other people say it looks dumb. I really like it, which is Legolas's crazy swing around the horse and onto the horse.
I like it.
That's my least favorite moment.
Everyone says it looks so crazy. Way. I love it so much.
Because he's an elf. So it works
just
different.
Doesn't work.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. That scene is meant to show you that the elves function entirely differently than a human does. However, I will admit, the effects on it are not great.
No, I mean, the effects aren't great, but I don't really care.
It's kind of cool.
I just think it's cool.
And, like, him walking on the snow in the previous movie.
Oh, that's always cool. He doesn't leave footprints in the snow.
Yeah, all that stuff.
This is a fun fact that I'm sure you will appreciate. Grishnak, the orc, that very famous line of, "What about their legs? They don't need those," from the previous movie.
Yeah.
Went on to become a very prominent horror villain actor in like three or four different horror movies. X, Deathgasm, Perfect Creature, and Dark Stories.
Did you just say Deathgasm?
Deathgasm, yeah.
Okay.
He went on to become a major...
Next week's episode of
Phantom Box. I've been wanting to watch X.
He's very good.
Yeah.
He's the old man in X.
So. Okay. Yeah. That's good to know. Did you have any more, Rick?
I did, and Samuel, he might know these. And it's not necessarily specific to the Two Towers, but I did uncover this while doing some research. We talked about how in the 90s, Miramax had the rights to Lord of the Rings, and Harvey Weinstein wanted Quentin Tarantino to direct a version of Lord of the Rings.
Whoa. That would be different.
I'm in. I'm listening.
In the 90s... George Lucas and Steven Spielberg wanted to do it, couldn't figure it out, ended up making Willow. If you haven't seen Willow, it's a lot of fun movie. Of course, we know what happened in the 70s with, you know, the
With the animated
version. The one I really didn't know about was that the Beatles wanted to make a version of Lord of the Rings.
What? Like with all of them as the stars?
With Paul as Frodo, Ringo as Sam, George as Gandalf, and John as Gollum. So they were seriously doing this. They approached Stanley Kubrick to be the director.
What's my name?
Kubrick. Kubrick looked at it and said, "This is unfilmable. This cannot be done."
This is unfilmable.
Kubrick telling the Beatles, "This is unfilmable."
Yeah. So Kubrick Kubrick ended up making 2001: A Space Odyssey. So
one thing I just want to say really quick. So you know how you're not supposed to have like in your movie unless it's like a plot point or something. You're not supposed to have your actors all look the same.
Mm.
I feel like every single one of the Beatles, they all look like brothers to me, and like every picture I've seen of them, I'm like, I kind of know who's who, but they all look like the same person
who's kind of
poorly cloned again and again. And so when you were saying they're all going to star in it, I was like, we're not going to be able to tell anybody apart. They're all going to look the same.
Ultimately, Tolkien vetoed that because it would have ended up being some LSD acid trip.
Well, and that's the other kind of big fact about all this, which is interesting. Tolkien was not necessarily a huge fan. He was open to adaptations during his lifetime, but he wasn't a huge fan. He preferred the radio play versions. When he passed away, though, the inheritor and controller of the state became Christopher Tolkien. Now, we have a lot of stuff we can thank Christopher Tolkien for, because he's the one who compiled the Silmarillion and Unfinished Tales and the History of Middle-earth, and he compiled a lot of Middle-earth content for us from his father's notes. He edited a ton of it. He essentially spent his life's work on Middle-earth. So we have a lot we can thank him for. That being said, he was a curmudgeon. And he absolutely hated any and all adaptations. He fought the movies with every ounce of his being. He hated them. Just had nothing good to say about them ever. And fought very hard to not have any adaptations of his father's work. And it wasn't until he died that the Tolkien estate could sell to Amazon and Rings of Power and all come about. Which maybe actually he was protecting us.
he called Peter Jackson Action Jackson.
Yeah, yeah. He did not have a good relationship with Peter Jackson and New Line Cinema and the films and just kind of an interesting, like, fight when the rest of the Tolkien estate is very much for adaptations and is very much for kind of progressing, because there's so much content out there that you can make stuff from besides even just the Lord of the Rings books. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Christopher Tolkien. And a lot of that content we have thanks to him, but he was just so vehemently against any and all adaptations of his father's work. Which is funny, because he added some of his own stuff when he was writing it. So, you know, just saying.
Well, that would be the final fun fact I'm aware of, is there's a scene where Faramir and his guy open up a map. And that is, like, a map from one of the books that, like, was drawn for one of the books.
Yeah.
It's exactly that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Well, it's like the big map in The Hobbit. Which is also in this movie. It's in Fellowship of the Ring. It's in the beginning of Fellowship of the Ring. That's the map that Tolkien drew for the book. Like, just straight up.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, the original one?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not like the...
Oh, it's a copy. Yeah. Okay.
Because all of his maps...
But it wasn't stylized or anything.
Yeah, all of his maps are so specific, and he did such good at drawing them all that in the movies, like, to this day, like, those are just the versions of the maps that everybody uses and everybody knows is the ones that...
That's amazing.
Tolkien made.
It's time to recast with this movie. We have some new characters, so I'm curious to see how much of the cast changes.
Are there any holdovers from the previous?
See, I just personally, what I did is that there were enough characters in this introduction where I had enough. Actually, like, this is like
excuse me,
the bonus feature cast. Like, I have the original cast that I think still transfers over, but then I have like
let's tack on some new characters.
And just in addition to, Because I know we pretty much, unless a character died for Star Wars, we just kind of kept a continuation. So I was like, let's spice it up. So I just did like a bonus feature characters.
Well, John, tell us your cast.
This is your time to shine.
I love this part, and I really have no idea why, but I just love. I'm always proud of my casting. I always think it's solid. I'm gonna start from the bottom up because this will make you happy in particular. I have Danielle as Gollum.
Yes, I was hoping for that so much.
No question. I have Mimi as Eowyn.
I think that's
cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. She's a badass. She
knows Krav
Maga.
She wraps her wrists.
Yeah,
she
wraps
her wrists. She does, for sure.
I have myself as Treebeard.
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
I have Tyler as Faramir.
Ooh, let's go. Okay. Oh, we take those things.
I like that.
This one's mildly funny to me, and I don't know why, but I have Russell as Grima.
Oh my gosh, as Wormtongue.
Wait, this is why it's mildly funny to me. I have Eomir as Colton.
Yes.
That's absolutely
That is the most accurate casting accurate. To ever cast.
Now they're brother and sister.
Which one's
Wait, hang on. I don't like that. Now that you say
it.
John's like, don't think
about it. We can't have
Game
of Thrones.
And I have, I mean, King Théoden is Rick.
Of course,
let's
yes.
go, correct statement.
See, I was going to say, one of the things that I would love to see is Grima Wormtongue Rick.
Mm. Honestly, I think you have the chops for it.
Just because I'd be interested to see what that would look like.
I would love to play a character that Brad Dourif had played. That would be awesome.
Because, like, here's the thing. That's a hard character to
it
play.
It is.
Yeah,
like, to and not only that, to be that revolting, but also have the tiniest pinch, the little tiniest sliver of humanity, which is the only reason why Eowyn was even crying and affected by what he said in the first place. Did I get the name wrong? The girl.
No,
I got it right. I got it right.
That's right.
So, like, that's the. I feel like that's the only reason why he got her emotional was because he was. There was, like, the tiniest pinch of humanity in there, overshadowed by grossness. And, like, to thread that needle and still be gross like that, I think is, like, really hard.
Yeah,
and
it
cool.
is.
And I have Samuel as Haldir.
Oh, yeah.
As Haldir. Okay.
Oh, that's
the health guy.
The guy who
nice.
Ended up dying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you had him in Elf. Because that is
true.
Samuel.
Haldir, Chiron, confirmed.
Variant.
Haldiron?
Oh my gosh.
He did die.
Chiron Hubbard.
All right.
Oh my
so,
gosh.
Our three rules for the drinking game for this movie.
Oh man.
What do y'all think? Samuel had one idea.
Which was every time that it's actually John Rhys-Davies, take a drink.
What?
Yeah, because he was barely ever like actually on screen.
And you can pick it out. Like, if you watch the movie with the intention of I want to see when it's John Rhys-Davies and when it's not as Gimli, it's like super obvious.
Really?
Yeah.
So that can be the take a drink rule. We still
okay.
need a
yeah.
shot and a finish your drink.
Every time Gollum gets hit in this movie,
no,
alcohol poisoning.
Every time,
I'm so sorry.
You
no,
take
you
a shot every time you see the Witch King.
Oh,
okay.
Ooh, every time the Nazgul show up, which is only like three times,
yeah. three or four times.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Every time the Nazgul show up,
four shots.
Every time Gollum.
It's a long movie.
Is having an inner monologue with himself, which I think only happens a couple of times in this movie.
I think just twice.
You finish your drink.
Yeah, first that's first. A good one.
Yeah.
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 For every second that the tree person is talking, you have to take a shot.
You have to be drinking while
you're you have to be drinking while
you have to slowly finish your drink anytime the Entmoot is on screen.
For as long as the Ents are talking in their native tongue, you have to keep drinking.
I would be more into shit. Two towers. I'd be more into it.
You'd be dead.
You would be face down in a gutter.
Dead from alcohol poisoning.
Well,
be underneath the car in the driveway.
Starting to my left with Samuel. Let's hear favorite and least favorite.
So I think my favorite moment is the. Ironically, because it's my least favorite storyline in the movie, but the Sean Astin monologue is just chef's kiss. So I think that's my favorite moment, and then I think my least favorite moment is how they treat Faramir in this movie.
So I knew that would be like everybody's favorite was Sam's monologue. So I'm going to go with Gandalf freeing Theoden.
Whole casting ceremony out.
That was really fantastic. Yeah. And my least favorite is Legolas getting on that damn horse. It defies all laws of physics, human or elf.
But also Legolas constantly defies all laws of physics through the entire trilogy.
A shield downstairs.
I could believe that. More than I could believe.
While shooting a bow and arrow.
Everything else he does is awesome. This is just, that's beyond the pale.
Yeah, that Shieldmaster feat, dog.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My favorite part was definitely Gandalf fighting the Balrog. And then him talking about fighting the Balrog and like having his apotheosis.
I was delayed.
I thought that was really cool. And it's super cool too, because when Gandalf comes back, wizards always arrive when they need to be, which I think is the coolest thing ever. And
well, you know, that ties back to his line from Fellowship of the Ring, where he says wizards always arrive when they mean to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, like, right when, I don't know, I thought it was great. Least favorite, Trees. Trees Mid. So that's it.
What?
Trees Mid. Here's the thing. Inoffensively, but I didn't like him. Like, I wasn't sitting here going, like, I actively, like, openly dislike you. This is taking away from the movie, but I'm just like...
Burn down the forest. Yeah.
I just was like, okay. You, all right.
That's why he doesn't get Tolkien. Because they can't relate on trees.
Yeah, that's it. There's a lot of trees in Tolkien.
Yeah.
Because Tolkien is in love with trees.
Tolkien's whole thing...
Hate trees.
His wife, like, followed him on a walk one time and saw him staring at a fallen tree for, like, 3 hours.
And that just explains Tolkien.
Yeah. You know, Tyler, you said inoffensively, Tolkien. But I took great offense at that.
Good.
We gonna throw hands.
My favorite moment, I mean, it's gonna have to go to... I'm not gonna make that jump. You're going to have to toss me. Don't tell the elf. Honorable mention, I think people forgot about this scene, but Aragorn trying to fake stomach Eowyn's awful stew.
And then he burns the crap out of his hand because he starts to pour it out, and she's like, wait, I actually thought, and he's like... like setting his hand on fire.
And least favorite moment. That's hard because I do have a lot of favorites in this.
You think, I'll celebrate you by saying I like how John thinks of the most obscure parts of the movie that like bring him joy, and then like holds on to it long enough to be able to relay that. Like we all talk about the big moments, but you talk about the man pretending not to like the soup scene, which I think is crazy in like an actually good way. Like I'm not trying to be a jackass. I genuinely think that that's awesome that you think of those moments.
I have so many honorable mentions, but I can only put one up there at a time. But least favorite, it has to be the whole Grima manipulation, like the weird, like the him ogling Eowyn. That was just a little like, ew, why?
Why? That's
just Grima's character.
Yeah, that's
why?
Favorite moment, because I can't just say the entirety of the Helm's Deep sequence, because that's like movie. But favorite moment, since I don't want to duplicate so we can get some good moments out there, definitely beginning of the movie, the Riders of Rohan circling the crew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that just
good.
Shows how insanely badass they are. They're so good. Least favorite moment. Least favorite, not from I disliked it, but it's always the one I don't like watching the most because it still freaks me out, is the swamp. The swamp always freaks me out.
Oh, with all the...
Freaks me out so bad. It's the one thing that gets under my skin, so that's probably where it's at.
Mimi? Man, this is hard because like all the... I'm trying not to say the repeat the same things, but obviously the monologues are my favorite for sure, but other than that, I think... I really liked the scene. I guess I'm going to talk about, like, what hit me different watching it for, like, I don't even know how many times I've watched this. But watching basically the despair of Theoden and watching him just be like, this is the end. And then the people around him rallying in a way of like, no, we're gonna ride out. And ride just out the hope me. Of if we're gonna go down swinging, and that whole thing of, you know, everyone has a different response. And like, so I just really deep dive into that and was like, yeah, you know. So that was probably.
And I also just want to say this about that part, because it's one of my favorite parts about it, is that Aragorn knows that Gandalf is supposed to be showing up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't say that. Mm-hmm. He doesn't go, hey, ride out with me because Gandalf might be about to show up. Mm-hmm. He's like, look, he said he's coming now. I don't know if he actually is or not. That appeal's not... The appeal of hope in this moment is not going to work. So I'm not going to mm-hmm. appeal to hope. I'm going to appeal to Last Stand.
Yeah, in your honor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, that's, you know, his whole thing of, like, showing what a true king is. And it's, mm-hmm. he's not putting himself on the pedestal. He's being the leader. And he's like, I'm not even king, but I'm going to make you look like the best, bravest king. And yeah. that's why Aragorn is the best.
that so is true. That,
objectively.
Yeah, that whole theme, loved it. Whatever. That's why Return of the King is my favorite, because we really get to, like, close that thing. And then my least favorite, I hate nothing about this movie, so I'm gonna pick one that, like, just gives me the blah. I just wanted Aragorn to kill Wormtongue. I am like, so much could have been avoided if y'all just killed him right then and there. Mm. And this whole mercy thing is just silly, because they will show you no mercy. I mean, later on he was like, show them no mercy, because you will receive none. And I'm like, yeah, where was that energy earlier? So, anyways, but yeah, that's my thing.
But of course, Grima had a role to play.
Yeah, yes.
Just like Gollum.
Yep.
Take it back.
Literally.
Back. Yeah.
Just like Gollum.
Yep.
Well, my favorites, I don't think I've, like, actually been said, but they would have to be, because I'm also obsessed with the Gollum inner monologues. It would have to be those, as well as Treebeard's walk out of the woods, mm-hmm. and, like, his ramp up to the charge, and, like, calling forward all the other Ents. Those would have to be, like, my absolute favorites. And then my least favorite, because I just, it just tears my heart out, is Frodo getting Gollum to come out of the pool only to get beaten and tortured, and seeing just how, like, both Gollum and Frodo are wrecked by it, but now the trust is, like, forever lost, and, you know, that, and that's, you know, it's never gonna change. Those would have to be it. Out of 10 potatoes, what will we rate the Two Towers?
What's taters?
So I've thought long and hard about this. I ranked Fellowship of the Ring 9.5. I will rank this 9, and you'll never guess what I'm going to rank Return of the King.
Never guess.
An 8.5.
It's a 10.
I think I was a 9 on Fellowship. I would probably go up 9.5, but I'm with Samuel in terms of what the climax of this trilogy is, so.
Danielle, do you remember what I said for the other one?
It's like 4.
No.
It's like a 3.
No.
We know that's not true, because you're still breathing.
I'll say an 8. 8. 8 potatoes.
You didn't even say it correctly.
You didn't even say it right.
Nope.
Go boil on. Them, mash them, stick them in a stew.
Do all 3 of them. 8.
What? John.
King taters.
This movie is a 10. It's a 10. It's always been a 10. It will always be a 10. So good.
Here's the thing. I agree, but, like, if I'm breaking the movie down into its 3 parts, I like the first part a tiny bit more than the middle part, and I like the last part best of all. So I'm just doing a reflect. Reflecting on that, but overall, it's 10 out of 10.
I'm sorry.
10 out of 10.
There was a lot happening in this corner.
Can you share it with our listeners?
I'm sorry. Colton got really worked up for a second, and he picked up his empty can and looked at me and crushed it and said, 10! Like, and it
We should start streaming this on YouTube when we record it.
It was so good. And there he goes. Good to see you.
At that point, we need
all right, Mimi.
Horseshoe couch.
Yeah.
I want to do the 9.5 because, like, I was going to agree with them, but I have opinions too. So I'm just going to say 10 out of 10 because all these are 10 out of 10, and I refuse to not give it a 10.
Fair. All I respect right. it.
I mean, this is a 10 out of 10 for me. This is my favorite of the three. 100%. I love it. It makes me happy. It's fun.
That might change when we get to Return of the King again.
What might change?
That your whole your outlook favorite. On life.
That is my favorite. I've watched it with you twice.
Yeah, but...
But you haven't watched it, have you?
Really? Samuel's like, don't worry. I'm going to change the movie and make it better.
Danielle, he knows
Samuel looking at Danielle, I can change it.
Cringe. Well, does anybody have any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Movie good.
Movie very good. Also, end of the movie, first time you really hear the full extent of Gollum's theme, which is inarguably the best song in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Gollum's theme is amazing. That's my last thought.
Yeah, on Return of the King, we're going to have a whole discussion about the music, but we'll get there.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Movie. Movie is.
Yeah, have you said
tree
that?
Good.
Tree...
Tree beard.
Wrong. I'm quoting Tyler. So we had polled our next hat pick, didn't we?
No, yes.
We didn't. Did we?
Yes, we did.
What was it?
It's Dead Poets.
You're right. It's
you're
Dead Poets
right.
Society.
It is Dead Poets
Captain
Society.
My
yeah.
Captain.
I thought we had pulled it because I was excited about it. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that one yet. That's the one that you say that everyone says
it's
going to hurt
you. It's so good. It's going to hurt your soul, but in the best way.
It's going to hurt your soul the best way.
Yes, so next time we'll be watching Dead Poets Society, and I'm really excited.
I think I'm busy.
It's such a good movie.
No, not.
You can visit our website, madartistco.com, for more information. If you have any comments, questions, corrections, or requests for us to review in the future, you can shoot us a message on our social media or email us at bannerbox.madartist@gmail.com.
And then next thing you know, you'll be a regular on the podcast.
Yeah, that's how it works. We just like let you come on our show all the time. Leave us a review wherever you're listening. It helps us out a lot. And we will see you guys next week.